Alrighty, we will call the Senate Transportation Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:32 p.m. Thursday, March 25th. Present so far, we have Vice Chair Senator Schauer, Senator Keel, and myself, Chairman Myers. That gives us a quorum to conduct business. Staffing today, we've got Nancy Hemingway from Senate Records, as always. We've got a new person in Doug joining us as our moderator, and Michaela Anderson, my committee aide, as usual. Quick reminder, of course, please turn off your cell phones. We have two items on the agenda today. We will be starting with Senate Bill 103, the Alaska Marine Highway System Operation and Planning Board, bill from the governor, as then followed that by Senate Bill 105 on road service area consolidation from myself. So with that, we're going to go ahead and start with SB 103. So I'd like, we've got Andy Mills and Deputy Commissioner Rob Carpenter from DOT. And they'll be presenting today. So, Mr. Mills, Mr. Carpenter, feel free to take it away.
Thank you very much, Chair Myers and committee members, for letting us present to you today Senate Bill 103. For the record, my name is Andy Mills. I'm Special Assistant to the Commissioner here at the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. And, of course, as you said, with me is Deputy Commissioner Rob Carpenter, my lifeline, should that be necessary. So in essence, SB 103, the AMHS OPB, as I might be referring to it, just to shorten it a bit, is a restructuring of the Marine Transportation Advisory Board into a new role that reflects an enactment or a pursuit of a recommendation from the reshaping work group that was formed by the governor's Administrative Order 313 at the beginning of 2020. That reshaping work group diligently worked through the year, having 29 meetings, and produced a report with recommendations to the governor in October of 2020. One of those recommendations was to restructure the Marine Transportation Advisory Board, and this bill is the governor's proposal to do just that. In the primary differences for the proposal in front of you is the OPB is a reflection that the Alaska Marine Highway System is best suited when they have additional resources and information that they don't perhaps have at the moment. In the recommendation report, page 14, it actually spells this out perfectly. It is the current MTAB is formed of capable individuals but not structured to effectively challenge and help the Alaska Marine Highway System with the large marine business and marine operation planning and execution issues that it confronts. And the recommendation here was to produce a board that would focus on operations and planning that was more well-grounded with outside advice focused on business and financial practices. And so this board changes the credentials of the members that are on the board, also does change the reporting requirements, and I am happy to walk through a sectional if that is the will of the committee.
Anybody have any questions before we do a sectional? Yeah. All righty. Go ahead.
All right. Very good. Thank you. Chair Myers, the first section, section one, seeks to amend AS 1965-011. And that, of course, starts with the change of names. Changing from an advisory board to an operations and planning board is, of course, the hallmark of the change that is sought here. And that starts with acknowledging what the role of this new board is. It is not intended to be an advisory board that provides information on service level desires from various communities, as the current makeup of the board has members from across a regional distribution. This new board is, as you'll see in the subsequent section, a board made up of individuals with a background in marine business and marine experience. Section one also calls for a short-term as well as a long-term plan. Those that have an annual time frame for the short-term plan and at least every 3 years for the long-term plan. Moving on to section two of the bill, it adds a new let's see, section two is establishing, amending again the name. And so section three is where we get into the meat of this. It looks to repeal and enact. Sorry, I'm reading from a different sheet. Let me go back. Section two, there we go. Section two actually is the meat. It repeals and replaces this entire section with, it adds a new section, AS 1965, 210, all the way to 295. And that partially is done as an acknowledgement that this is a complete restructuring of the board in intent, that this is a new board with a new purpose. The sections, subsections within Section 2 outline the board membership. They speak to the officers in the quorum. They stipulate the meeting rules. They address per diem and expenses. They address record inspection, public records. They also establish the Department of Law is there for legal advice. And also, most importantly, 270 outline the powers, duties, and functions of the Operations and Planning Board. Aside from that, I might touch specifically on AS 1965-220, the board composition. It outlines that the Commissioner of Transportation and Public Facilities, or his designee, will be on the board, as well as 10 public members, three of them with marine operating and maintenance and vessel construction experience, three members with business experience, at least one of those in marine-related business, two members, one of whom will represent an Alaska Native organization or tribe, and one of whom represents a community served by the AMHS. Also, one member who may be retired of one of the Marine unions, and one member with experience in restructuring business in the travel industry. That sounds oddly specific, but in this case, the original statutes talk to someone in the tourism business, and that restructuring that is added on is intended again, with the reshaping effort to show that this is to restructure operations, to make a difference in how we approach the board's function in relation to DOT and AMHS. Section 3 is the section that repeals the existing 110 to 195 of the previous MTAB. Section 4 adds a new section to the uncodified law of Alaska that establishes the staggered terms. When you, of course, establish a new board, you put in here what the staggered terms will be for the initial appointments. Section 5 then adds to the uncodified law of Alaska a deadline of September 1st, 2021, of course, should this be enacted, for the board's initial reports. As required under Section 2 of this bill. And I, my understanding of that is that this board is to get to work right away once they are appointed and not wait until September 1 of 2022 should this pass this legislative session. Section 3, of course, is your immediate effective date for this legislation. I'll pause there.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Mills. Unless you have anything further, I think we're ready to go to questions.
Please do.
All right. Any questions from the committee so far? Senator Michiki.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Mills, in the past, you've had an ex officio from one from each body just to kind of carry the message back to the respective legislative bodies. Is that something you considered here, or is there a specific reason that you have not?
Through the chair, Senator Michiki, thank you for that. I appreciate it. The recommendation from the work group did not actually have members from the legislature on this board. I don't know the intent behind that. I do know that part of this, of course, is to pivot to something more akin to how to restructure and operate the Alaska Marine Highway System more as a business. And perhaps the current composition of the MTAB is a reflection of a different structure that advises the service levels. And one more thing to that would be the Alaska Marine Highway System actually does a lot of public input from various parts of the state. And so the amount of information that it already collects on service level needs is fairly substantial. And so I guess in answering your question, I think that the recommendations from the work group acknowledge that there's a different skill set that is required for the season that we're in with AMHS.
All righty. Senator
Schauer. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Bochicki actually asked one of the questions I had, so I appreciate that. It saves me some time, but I'll be looking to amend that. I think it's something we need to have on there for a number of different reasons, and it's on a bunch of others as well, so this would be a little bit unique to not do that. So I do question the reason why, but that's fine. We can put it back in. So the other thing, just to talking generically speaking, can you tell me as I look at this, is what it kind of feels like is in essence, and I know they're trying to look at a different thing here, it's kind of a warmed over version of what we've been doing, because I think there's general acknowledgement that the ferry system, and you look at things like the, you know, what's happened with the Alaska class ferries, you know, bought them for $68 million, sell them for $5 million, didn't work, didn't have the planning process where, you know, the off-ramp wasn't done right and had to be redone, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So we're spending a lot of money subsidizing, you know, a significant portion of this. And I appreciate the fact that this is a, you know, trying to look at a pivot, but when I look at kind of where we've been with this and what has happened and how we've gotten here, if the board doesn't have teeth to it, if we're not hiring like a CEO or something of that effect that's going to actually be able to come in and have a board that's going to say, this is what you're going to do to affect this, I wonder, are we setting ourselves up for the same thing? Because if we keep hugging the ferry to death and spending money on it, we're headed in a direction that's not sustainable long term. Ridership is down. We went through all that before, you know, a few weeks ago, and we're having to subsidize it to keep it alive. And when you look at other places like down south here in the southeast where they have that small company that's, you know, about 70%, 70-30, which you could flip that for the Alaska Marine Highway System, they're using smaller boats, they're using a hub and spoke model. I have a lot of questions about what is the board going to do, and I guess the generic question here, Mr. Chair, is what are the teeth? What teeth does the board have to do anything other than look at it, study it, and give us a report? Because we're going back to the same model of DOT running this, and we're not making the changes. So how are we going to get there?
I may let the deputy commissioner answer right after this, but just to correct the record, Senator Schauer, through the chair, you did mention ACFs as a cost and then selling. Those were the fast ferries, fast vehicle ferries. But you are correct that the ACFs, the Alaska class ferries.
Thank you for the correction.
Absolutely. Just you were correct on some of those details. I just thought I would correct that one note. And you do bring up essentially a core question that, I mean, we agree. What is going to make this board more effective? And from the report and from the recommendations, which this was crafted from, the effort here is to have individuals on the board that bring expertise that can inform the decisions that the system has a difficulty making. So, I mean, we work with, obviously, the Alaska Marine Highway System, and they have some very dedicated and great folks that we work with every day, and they're busy operating that system on a day-to-day basis and keeping some of these aging ships running and servicing these communities. And so they don't necessarily have some of the resources available to them to sit down and think as alternatively or differently than the operation that is in front of them. And I think that's part of what this change for this board does. But as to additional teeth, let me let the deputy commissioner jump in.
Yeah, thanks for that, Andy. For the record, Rob Carpenter, Deputy Commissioner, DOT. So it's good. It's a really good question, Senator Schauer, and through the chair, and one that I think we're all and the working group struggle with a bit is how do you know, barring some kind of corporation model, you know, like the Alaska Railroad or the Permanent Fund Corp or something like that, how do you give a board teeth? And I'm not sure we're there yet. I think one of the key members on the board to me is the designee from DOT themselves. For example, I would envision myself on the board as a designee from the commissioner. What that does is make me involved and make me the agency directly involved in communicating, working with the board, producing these documents, versus some kind of advisory board. They're just providing, you know, their input, but not necessarily integrating and working with the agency on direction and on, you know, the mission, if you will. Keeping the board within the agency itself has its benefits. The multimodal aspect, marine highway within the agency has, because we can address the multimodal aspects of the transportation system in Alaska. Whereas if the board was independent, or I'm sorry, the Marine Highway Corporation was independent, separate from DOT, there wouldn't be this ability to perhaps, you know, do some planning across all the modes and all the regions, if you will. But back to the teeth thing, it's certainly something we're all conscious of. And I think having DOT on the board is probably the most instrumental part as far as giving it teeth. And then, you know, just all that marine and business experience, I think business experience is the key here. Instead of constituents trying to make plans, we have people that are trying to think like a business and think, you know, what can we do to create efficiencies, make this system more effective, to sustain itself in the long run. So I'm not sure that answered your question, but it is something we're all kind of struggling with. The working group struggled with it, and we're hopeful that we can give it some kind of teeth to be effective, if you will.
Senator Shower, follow-up.
Thank you. And I don't think either of you need to answer this. It's more of a comment, I suppose. First of all, I want to make it clear that I'm not necessarily an interior guy, because I get this. I start asking hard questions like, well, you know, he doesn't care about the ferry. Baloney. I've got two ports in my district. I absolutely care about it. And it's a duty that we have to have, because we have a state that's spread out where we don't have a choice. You can't do this by air. I made that clear in finance 2 years ago, briefing it. You cannot keep these communities alive via airplane. It doesn't work. My question comes down to, so I want to make that clear, that the ferry system is needed. The question is, what kind of ferry system is needed? Is it the same old model we've been using for decades that clearly is not getting us what we need anymore, and we're having to sustain more and more money, and is it effective? Is this board have the teeth that it needs to do the right thing? And I guess my question would be, you know, I know you said maybe it's not time for that, Deputy Commissioner. My question is, maybe it is time. Because maybe it's time we need to look at that and take a different direction, because, you know, everybody may disagree with that, and that's okay. But my concern is that, like I said before, that we have a system that is in some way starting to fail. The ships, we're having to sell them. We're having a hard time maintaining them. And I look at a small operation in Southeast Alaska, you know, to the center to my right, is aware of it, and they're effective, and they're getting the job done. And while we don't necessarily need to change that DOT is essentially running it, maybe we need that board to have the teeth and to give that direction to force those changes. My question would become, if DOT keeps it, you've had it for this amount of time and we haven't really changed it. And I'm not saying this because people are doing it wrong or not trying hard, but perhaps that's, you know, that same thing with the Empire you mentioned, maybe that's part of the problem. It's hard to change the momentum of something when it's got momentum and it's a big system. DOT is a big system with a lot of things. Maybe you need this breakout to focus on the ferry system so that we can change direction and make it efficient, because we need it to work. It's an essential part of the state and how we're set up. So not a question, Mr. Chairman. I'm really got a lot of questions on this and what we do, and it's opened up a chance for us to discuss this and maybe take a different direction. So thank you for letting me pontificate on that, because I do believe in it. I'm just wondering if maybe now's the time to start working on something different. Thank you.
Senator Keel and then Senator Michicki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Other than disagreeing maybe that we're spending more and more money on the ferry system recently, and I'm not sure that's where the trend line's gone, I do actually agree with the comments of the senator who sits next to me here on the question of, I guess, whether the board has teeth. I think you quoted the work group as saying we need this to be structured to effectively challenge and help the department. But I guess as I look through the bill, right, it's 11 members versus 12, so that's in the right direction, still awfully big. They all still serve at the pleasure of the governor. They still meet the same number of times a year. The department staffs them just like the MTAB. They advise on the deputy commissioner, but they don't get a say just like the MTAB. We kind of keep running through that. I certainly appreciate the bill's instruction about the expertise of the members, but you know that there's really nothing that prohibits the governor from appointing members with those expertise in those areas now. There's plenty of folks who know maritime industry in Prince William Sound and in Southeast and the various regions. So if the department were interested in better integrating this group and really deeply taking involving this group in the workings of and truly the long-term planning of the system, what adjustments would make sense? Would we give them a substantive role in the STIP process so that maintenance was actively something that they had to be involved in? I don't know if we can put them in the budget process. Would we perhaps insulate them a little more from turning over with every governor by having someone else appoint some of the members? What recommendations would you have that would more deeply sink deeper roots of this board into the department's actual work?
Thank you, Senator Keel, through the chair. The previous Senator Schauer before you and your comments, we definitely hear you. And I know one additional, smaller portion of teeth that this has is the specific reporting requirements at the top of page 4 in section 2. It calls out specifically what the report should have in it as far as substance, and to call it out that specifically certainly means you cannot omit some of those crucial elements that the reshaping work group called out as recommendations for things for this group to put into plans that are put forward and to consider and bring their talents to bear on. As far as additional things that could be done to this, my understanding is that the administration, given the reshaping work group recommendations, is putting this bill down as a starting place. And certainly if the legislature has additional, if members of this committee have additional thoughts on that, I think we are open to the conversation to having this board truly impact the operations and planning in a way that does change trajectory. Because that is the point of the governor's reshaping work group. I have said this before when we were going through, it's not the rehashing work group. We are not here to try and maintain status quo for areas where I think everyone is evident that there are changes we can make to improve the system for coastal communities that are served. And so certainly I think we're open to that conversation.
Senator Michiki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rob or Andy, I have a couple questions. One question I have is I like the expertise on the board composition, with the exception of C. I think what C should say is two representatives of communities served by the Alaska Marine Highway System, with one of those members representing an Alaska Native organization. You have qualifications that are system-related, right, from A through E, and I think you know where I'm going, and that is that just being an Alaska Native doesn't make you a member. Being an Alaska Native that represents a community served by the Alaska Marine Highway System is, so I'm just telegraphing a change, and I'm sure that's probably what you meant, but that's not how it's written. And I appreciate you bringing the bill forward. I get it. You have a starting point. You have an idea. You put it on the table. And I appreciate that. I think it needs to be done. But I am a little concerned with the lack of a definitive work product. So you have some thoughts about what that could look like, but I don't see a buy date. So I'm from the private sector, and when we have a problem that looks a little bit like the dysfunction of the Alaska Marine Highway System, we don't put it in someday in the future in 1 and 3 year increments. We say we want these things in a work product by June of next year and some other things that come afterward. So I'm kind of telegraphing some of the ideas that I would have on making this more effective to have that system change that we're talking about on a more aggressive work product, specific work product deadline. You include consideration of, but I think we need, those are the teeth that I'd be looking for when we talk about teeth. Get after it. You know the problems we have today. And deliver me an effective work product for serious consideration by either the legislature or others on a much more aggressive schedule. We have a problem now, and I think we need to deal with this problem now. Now being serious results within the next couple of years. And I think that would bring along statewide support for the Marine Highway System when they realize that there are some better ways to do business, and that we mean it, we're aggressive, and we will deliver something effective in a reasonable amount of time. Do you have any comments to my suggestions at all?
Rob, I think go
Andy,
for it.
Andy and I are looking at each other like, me, you. Okay, so Rob Carpenter, DOT. Senator Machiki, through the chair, I mean, those are great points. Being aggressive with timelines and goals and missions of the board is certainly something we would be welcome to discussing. The board itself, I'm a little in a spot where I feel like I can't even really make decisions right now, because I feel like this board needs to be in place to be a sounding board and to provide that direction. That is not just, it's not so political anymore. It's driven by business-minded folks that are making decisions, and they're put in place for that reason. And so longer-term thoughts, I know the Marine Highway System has plans, maintenance plans, recapitalization plans, and they've had them for years. And we've touched on them briefly in a committee in the House. But again, it's like we need to run all that through this new board and see what comes out on the other side, and aggressive timelines would be a great addition. You're right. Thank you.
So I've got a couple of questions while we're at it. So speaking of the board, we've got 3-year terms on the board as written. And I believe one of the recommendations from the working group was to, very loosely paraphrase, basically try to take politics out of it as much as possible. And when you got 3-year terms, you can have the entire board change over during a single term of a single governor. And that concerns me a little bit. And it makes me think that maybe we should lengthen out those terms, 5 years, 8 years, something along those lines. I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
Chair Myers, I thank you for that. I think that again, we would potentially be open to that. I won't speak for boards and commissions. I know in researching this, I talked to them about standard compositions of boards and standard approaches, and I think that 3-year term is what existed in other cases, and so I don't know that there's necessarily an argument against what you're suggesting. So open to that conversation.
Understood. Okay. Another one along the lines of years and planning and stuff. We're switching the long-term plan from being updated every 5 years to every 3 years. And I was going over something similar with somebody not too long ago, and they were reminding me that if you put your planning terms too close together, you can stop planning and you start planning to plan. And it concerns me that you start putting the updates so close together that you can't actually sit down and have the time necessary to actually think through the updates needed and and actually get good information and reflect on what's going on. So I'd be a little bit more inclined to leave it at the five-year plan. What's your comment to that?
Chair Myers, thank you for that as well. I don't know that I have a specific thought on that. 5 years is a long time in state government, especially for someone who's worked in exempt service. And so I see wisdom in what you're saying. And I think this was supposed to be, the impetus here was supposed to be that short-term vision annually is to drive this group to conversations that were very active, and that long-term vision, that long-term plan every three instead of five was to guarantee that they were actively working on that rather than letting it sit on the shelf. And so, again, I don't know if you're doing an annual report, if it has to be three. I think the notion there was to apply some pressure, as I think the notion a lot of folks agree on is the aim here.
Well, I'd agree that applying pressure is a good thing, but I don't know if applying pressure to the board is what's necessary or so much as applying pressure to DOT. Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Carpenter, do you anticipate this board doing budgetary construction, at least in the macro? Or how much detail do you think this board will get into the budgetary numbers of the Marine Highway System?
Rob Carpenter, DOT, through the chair. Senator Bishop, that's a great question, and one I had been talking about previously is, you know, I kind of envisioned, if you will, like the Board of Regents with the university or the Mental Health Trust Authorities Board, where they work with, you know, the Marine Highway System to actually compile a budget for a year, and then they might recommend that to the governor for consideration when their budget was put forth. Interesting with the Board of Regents and the Mental Health Trust is, you know, the legislature will often ask to see the budget of those boards and how it differs from what was put forth. That's kind of enlightening. It provides the legislature with another point of view on the desires or what these boards envision a path that's different from what the governor is presenting. To the extreme, in the Mental Health Trust case, they actually, if there's a change or deviation from their proposed budget, there has to be an explanation by the legislature and or the governor as to why. So that's another, you know, maybe a tooth you could add into the mix. But to me, I think they should be. If they're planning for the future, they're planning for the present, some kind of board or budget interaction makes sense to me. And to have that, if you're trying to take the politics out of the system, at least having a layer of this is what the board recommended, and whether that's what comes out in the end or not is, you know, that's to be determined, but at least you have another facet to look at, if you will. But again, that's not included in our bill, but it's certainly something to think about.
Follow up.
Senator Bishop.
And to further dovetail to the chair's comments about 3 to 5 years, then, you know, if they were going to hypothetically budget, play with the budget, and I think they would have to if you're going to want real outcomes and quantified suggestions, I would lean on 5 years planning because your STIP's 5 years planning. Your STIP funding to coincide with your STIP funding. So you line up with your funding stream. That's all. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I very much like Senator Bishop's suggestion. It does speak to the need to have somebody on there who's not appointed by and serves at the pleasure of the governor, because as we all know from our careful combing of the statutes, the Board of Education Early Development is supposed to propose the budget for that whole department. And what happens, since they all serve at the pleasure of the governor, is that the governor proposes a budget, and then there's a board meeting where they're briefed on what they sent. There's also a vote at the end, you know, to officially send it. So it's a great idea. It is going to take a little structure change. Unfortunately, Legislative Legal Services tells me I can't make this board a removal for cause board, no matter how much I want to or how I try to write it.
Anything further? All right. Senator Schauer.
Thank you. Probably for the Deputy Commissioner, Mr. Carpenter, if you want to answer just a question and then a follow-up I'll have on a comment, is the board recommendations, they do their work, they recommend it, and then that recommendation goes to who to make decisions about what may or may not be implemented from what they recommend? Who actually is the execution authority, agency, et cetera, from what they provide?
Rob Carpenter, DOT, through the chair, Senator Schauer. From my knowledge, it's still the commissioner of DOT that will be making any final decisions. And I think that's one of the reasons, the main reasons, I believe, we need to have a player at the game to be on the board. We'll be working, a designee of the commissioner's on the board, he's working with the board, figuring out what needs to happen, how we're going to do it, and that creates the conduit to the agency, to the governor, to get the message of where the board is going, what they want to do, and how they want to do it. Speaking for myself, if I was on there, I would have my sleeves rolled up, and I'd be working with the other board members, and we would be doing it together and come up with a consensus of where to go. And that I think is what the intent is, it's like a transportation commission, so to speak, that other states have although they even have more teeth. It's to provide the guidance to the commissioner and then eventually to the governor for the final decisions on what has actually transpires.
Thanks, Rob. I kind of assumed that. I just wanted to get it on the record from you. It highlights the point I'm making is that if we continue doing what we're doing, then the commissioner of DOT, a very large entity with many things they're working on, and we are where we are today, perhaps it is time that we look at, and I don't disagree with you, by the way, on having DOT involved in this both directions is critical. It's you can't separate you from what needs to happen. My question goes back to, based on that answer, is maybe it is time that we look at a different model, as we discussed before, without cycling back to that, as opposed to just handing this to the commissioner, and that's what we've been doing for a long time. So perhaps a different direction is warranted at this point to do this, but I'm not saying you shouldn't be a part of the board or multiple members on it to make sure this works for coordination, but I just wanted to make that point, because I think that is the connection that we're driving to, is that the board does all this work, but it still goes into the same area and the same things that we've done already, and maybe we need to be thinking about a different way. So thank you for that. I just wanted to put that on the record of the why I think maybe it's perhaps something we should be looking at for a change. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any other discussion from the committee? Seeing none. All right. Mr. Carpenter, Mr. Mills, thank you for coming before us today. We're going to be holding this bill for now. We'll be doing public testimony on it next week, and we'll talk about where we go with that one a little further later on. So, moving on. We're going to be moving on to Senate Bill 105 on the road service area consolidation. That would be my bill. I'm going to have my staff member, Michaela Anderson, testifying on the opening of it. And then this bill is brought to us at the request of the Fairbanks North Star Borough. So, for some more in-depth questions, we've got Michael Bradley, the Borough Rural Services Manager online, and then Jill Dolan, the Borough Attorney as well. So, Ms. Anderson.
For the record, Michaela Anderson, staff to Senator Robert Myers. This bill, as the Senator said, was brought to us by Fairbanks North Star Borough to address an issue with road service areas, or RSAs, that they have encountered. An RSA is a taxing jurisdiction formed at the request of the residents in a geographical area, where those residents of that geographical area vote on boundaries and a mill rate on real property to pay for the road services such as grading or plowing. Starting in 1972, RSAs benefited from state shared revenues to provide services, though in the 90s, state shared revenues dropped and the RSAs were prompted to hold elections to establish tax caps to supplement the decreasing state funds. There are currently no state shared revenues for road service areas anymore. In the Fairbanks area, the existing RSAs resisted annexation of parcels, which resulted in the formation of new RSAs, which leads to kind of the crux of this issue. Out of the 7 second-class boroughs in the state, 5 of them have road service areas: Fairbanks, Kenai, Ketchikan, Kodiak, and Mat-Su. Fairbanks North Star Borough has the most RSAs with 103. Mat-Su Borough follows in second with 16. SB 105 addresses the issue with the vast number of RSAs in the Fairbanks North Star Borough by adding a new exception allowing timely consolidation of 2 or more RSAs without a vote of residents, but rather by the agreeance of the affected RSA boards, as long as no new parcels are added or removed. Currently, consolidating RSAs requires a majority vote with representation from all affected RSAs, and these votes traditionally fail due to poor turnout. This bill would not allow the Assembly or Mayor's Office to consolidate RSAs without the request of consolidating RSA boards. And again, as the Senator said, we have Michael Bradley, the Rural Services Manager, on the line. He can elaborate if there's any other questions.
Mr. Bradley, do you have any opening comments before we start in on questions?
I have a few things to say, and good morning. For the record, my name is Michael Bradley. I'm the Rural Services Manager for the Fairbanks North Star Borough, and I want to thank Chair Myers and the members of the committee for providing me this opportunity to speak in favor of Senate Bill 105. My division administers and helps manage the road service areas throughout the Fairbanks North Star Borough. As a second-class borough, we receive our road construction and maintenance powers through service areas. Currently, we have 103 road service areas that maintain a total of 498 miles of road. So, you know, why do we have such a large number of service areas? The following is just a brief history of our service area formations. The borough's first road service area was established in 1965. The second road service area was established in 1969. And then between 1973 and 1979, 20 service areas were established. In the 1980s, 67 road service areas were established, with all but 2 being between 1981 and 1986. In the 90s, we had 13 service areas established, with our final service area being established in 2002. Some of the records that were found indicate the state shared revenue for local roads started around 1972 for road construction and improvements. Sometime in the mid-70s, the service areas were started to receive about $2,500 per mile for operation and maintenance. This became the majority, if not the entire, revenue received by the service areas. By the early 90s, that number was reduced to about $1,400 per mile and continued to decline until 2003-2004, where the state sharing revenue had ended. The reduction in state revenue sharing then prompted a number of service areas to hold elections to establish a tax revenue cap to supplement the ultimately replace the now non-existent SSR funds. So from 1991 to 97, there was 74 road service areas that had elected to have a tax revenue cap. So, you know, based on the information that I found, and my theory is that existing road service area commissions at the time resisted to annexing a new parcels and roads to their service area. So in response, the administration decided to form new service areas. The increase in new road service areas seems to correlate with the state shared revenue the borough received from 1972 to 2004. Are there other boroughs in the state with this issue? Well, there are 5 second-class boroughs in the state that have road service area powers. We have 103. Mat-Su has 16. Ketchikan has 10. Kodiak has about 4. And then Kenai Borough has one larger one, but it's split up into 5 different regions administratively. So Based off of other borough service area numbers, it appears that no other second-class borough is facing the same issue that we do with the Fairbanks North Star borough. Service area consolidation under the current law is a substantial process. At present, elections are required for consolidation of two or more service areas if voters reside within those existing service areas. Our process would include holding open house meetings, the approval of the election ordinance from the borough assembly, which authorizes the elections for the residents in the service areas, and holding an election for each service area to be consolidated would be difficult at best. The amount of labor hours and costs associated with elections would be substantial. At this time, we have 13 contractors that hold contracts to perform maintenance in our 103 service areas. Some only maintain one service area, while other contractors maintain 10 to 20 service areas. With consolidation of service areas, it would provide greater efficiencies and potentially better prices for the contractors, and in turn, less contract administration for them. For my staff, the consolidating some service areas would mean a reduction in contract administration and an increase in on-site presence, looking at road conditions in the areas. In regard to service area commissions, consolidations would mean a reduction of available seats. Currently, we have 266 commissioners out of an available 426 seats. That's a 38% vacancy rate. There's 160 vacant seats available. That concludes my testimony. I want to thank the committee again for providing me this opportunity to speak in favor of Senate Bill 105, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
The first question I've got for you, Mr. Bradley, is do you have a rough estimate of how much money you expect to save if we go through a wave of consolidations?
No, we don't have those numbers as of yet. I think we'd definitely save on contractor prices and administrative savings are unknown at this point.
All righty. Thank you. Senator Machicki, did you have a question?
I do.
Senator Machicki.
I'm trying to understand why it's and I'm not speaking against the bill at all. I'm just trying to understand why there's a problem putting it on the ballot for that area during a just typical municipal election or something else where you're already running an election. Why is that a problem no matter who shows up to vote?
So it's just really down to, so each service area election would need to be separate outside of a general municipal election just because the voters would be in different areas of the borough. And so when we have these service area elections, they are separate from separate from the normal municipal elections due to that fact that they're all separate taxing jurisdictions, and just the sheer number of the amount of service areas and consolidating those would be a large cost for the borough and a large time strain for the clerk's office that would have to administer those elections.
All right. Further questions? Senator Schauer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Chicky asked one of my questions here. I mean, it seems like we combine a lot of things and we need to. You could certainly have those on there as add-ons. I'm not sure I agree with that assessment, but that's not mine to run. That's yours. I do have one. I thought a version of this bill was introduced previously, last couple of years. And if it was, I guess one of my questions would be, has the borough reached out to residents to ask them what they want, as opposed to trying to consolidate? I assume that the breakup, happened for reasons. So has there been an effort to poll the citizenry inside the borough and ask them what their desires are regarding consolidation?
No, not at this point. We did have a bill with similar language that Senator Coghill at the time had sponsored, and I don't think it made it out of committee last year. And in regards to, may I ask your second question? again?
Well, it was just a follow-up on Senator Machicki's question. It wasn't really a question as much as a comment. It seems like that's something that you could get past if you really wanted to. With the high failure rate you're discussing, as Senator Machicki asked, it seems like you could figure out a way to put them on there to get that done, because otherwise you're not going to get this done without what would appear to be, and I guess just a follow-up question to that, Mr. Chair, is that it sounds like this is a consolidation, allowing you to do the consolidation without getting the votes. That's kind of what this seems like to me. And again, like Senator Machicki said, I'm not necessarily speaking for or against it at this point. I'm just asking a question, but this seems like a alternative method to consolidate the RSAs without actually getting the will of the people and having the vote. So I kind of wonder about the process, and I'm just trying to figure out what the real intent is. Is this just to consolidate and give you a method to do so without having the votes from the RSAs, or what's at play here?
Yeah, so it's, you know, I consider this another tool in our toolbox. This would allow us to join two or more service areas together if the commissions agreed to it. There would still be an effort to reach out to residents to let them know what's going on. Those details haven't been fleshed out yet. We would definitely reach out to residents. It just would be a different process, and it's just another tool in our toolbox to be able to try to bring two service areas or more together without having to hold an election of the residents. But it would still have the process of assembly action as well as service area action through the commission.
Last question, Mr. Chair, for now.
Senator Schauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One more question for now. I'll have to think about this one a bit, but who appoints the commissioners currently, and who would, if the commissioners, giving the commissioners the power, would that give the power to the mayor, I guess is what I'm trying to ask here. So who appoints them, and if these powers were to go to the commissioners, would that, in essence, be given more power to the borough mayor?
So to answer your question on who appoints them, so the mayor appoints and the assembly confirms the commissioners.
So, Mr. Chairman, one last thing. So, would we not de facto be consolidating power to the mayor with this bill? That's what it seems like. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure he needs to answer that. Just that's what it seems like. I just ask him. Thanks.
Okay. Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What was his name? Doug. No.
Michael Bradley.
Michael, does the where's the borough assembly at on this piece of legislation?
That's a great question through the chair, Senator Bishop. So this request came from our legislative committee, which is comprised of assembly members, I believe the mayor and legal. So it was a part of a request through the legislative committee. So, as far as I know, since it passed the resolution, that the assembly members would be in support of this legislation.
Could, with the chair's permission, could you provide that resolution supporting this legislation from the borough assembly to the members of the committee, to the chairs?
Yes.
Thank you. Senator Machicki, you had another question?
Yeah, I do. I'm actually a little more comfortable with it in my area because the road service members are elected, and we do have problems with vacancies on a regular basis. It's hard to get people interested in serving on the board. So at least it would be an elected official in almost every case that's making the decision to consolidate. I'm a little bit more comfortable with that. Yeah, it's interesting. I understand the issue. It is hard to get people interested. It's a relatively thankless job, and when people are happy about roads, they're happy about them, but they're never happy about them. So anyway, yeah, in my area, I mean, I will check with my borough, but I think folks would be a lot more comfortable with elected, and I hear what Senator Schauer is saying. You are consolidating some power, whatever power there is in a road service board. I will check with my borough and see if they're comfortable with it as well. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All righty. Mr. Bradley, so I just got a little contact from somebody back home this morning. Just found out about this. Is it correct that the borough passed an ordinance earlier this year to make all road service commissioners' terms expire this June?
Oh, that's a great question. So yes, we had an ordinance that actually changes the commissioner terms from 2 years to 3 years. I believe that ordinance was passed in December of 2019, and it was a decision that first rose from the commissioner, from a commissioner who was tired of reapplying every 2 years. So the assembly passed an ordinance that changed their terms from 2 years to 3 years, and in order to get everybody on the proper stagger, all the commissioners' terms will be expiring at the in June 30th of 2021. But in the meantime, we will be sending out applications to everybody who's currently a commissioner, and they'll be pre-filled out, and then we'll draw which commissioners get the 1, 2, or 3 year term within the committees.
All right, thank you. Follow up to that. So that concerns me a little bit on the timing, because of this legislation. Let's assume this legislation passes this year. That's not guaranteed, but it's a possibility. If it did, then all of a sudden, all of the road service area commissioners would be up for reappointment. As Senator Schauer also already noted, all of the commissioners are appointed by the mayor. So you would all of a sudden have every single commissioner in the borough appointed by the mayor who wants the road service areas to consolidate. So now we're completely avoiding the will of the people, and he could just appoint commissioners only who would be willing to consolidate. That could turn into his litmus test. Is that correct?
Well, I can't answer for what the mayor can and can't do, or would and wouldn't do. I guess I could tell you that every year half of our commissions expire, so we have to re-up. We have to re-up every year. The process that we do it in is we usually send stuff out to all commissioners around April, and the people that are going to be expiring, and we send out pre-filled out applications, and the ones that still want to be a commissioner sign up, and we move those forward to the mayor, and those get moved forward to the assembly. And I don't see that changing. The only change here just had to do with getting people staggered to that 3 year term, and then their next term will be every 3 years. I do have a question, and I don't know how to do this, but I do have our attorney, Ms. Dolan, wanted to clarify a few things, and I just didn't know how that process worked.
That's fine. Ms. Dolan, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. This is Jill Dolan from the Fairbanks North Star Borough. Thank you, Chair Myers and members of the committee. I just wanted to clarify a couple things. On the issue of whether it would give power to the mayor, so in addition to those commissioners being appointed by the mayor and then confirmed by the assembly, any boundary change has to occur by ordinance. So while this proposed bill does require that the service area boards make that recommendation and request consolidation, the ultimate decision would be in the elected officials, because they would actually have to pass an ordinance, either consolidating the service area or changing the boundaries. The other thing I was hoping I could clarify was on why we can't run the elections for the service areas with a regular municipal election, and that is because our precinct boundaries do not align with the service area boundaries. And so we have to determine whether someone's a resident of the service area and which election they would be voting in, because consolidation would require elections of both service areas that would be combining, and so there's different ballots, and they're accounted for separately. So I just wanted to clear that up for you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Dolan. Mr. Chair. Senator Schauer?
I'm going to ask this question to Mrs. Dolan here, just to clarify And I appreciate the answer in trying to clarify that about the ballots and why you couldn't hold it with municipal elections. However, you know, we have that regularly where we'll have multiple ballots that, you know, somebody will fill out. And I'll give you an example. This last election cycle, we had the federal election, state, and we had some individual ones for the borough. And we have aligned those. And so you had multiple ballots you would be handed and turn them all in at once. So I'm still not quite clear on why you couldn't align them up on the same day and have those ballots. It might be work. It might take a little bit of money. But if the ultimate goal was to have the voice of the people and have a chance to have this elected, it's certainly within the realm of doing it. It's just a matter of whether you have the will to do it. I mean, am I wrong on that? It's just I'm not quite following how it's you can't do it on the same day and have multiple ballots, because that happens for other issues.
Yeah, thank you, Senator Schauer. And I think that's a very good observation. However, the municipal, state, and state elections, they run the same precinct boundaries. And so it's our clerk's office that runs the elections, and our municipal clerk could probably articulate this better than I could. But we actually, with our service area elections, someone has to essentially come in, request a ballot, and then we verify that they're a resident of the service area, and we have to decide, you know, in this case, we would have to determine which ballot they get, whether it's the service area that they're being annexed into or whether they're the other service area, because we have to count the ballots in both service areas separately. So I don't know if that's helpful or not, but our clerk's office has always been fairly insistent that it not run with the municipal election.
That's too hard.
In effect, yes. All right. Any further questions from the committee? Senator Machicki.
Just curious. So we have very few service areas, very different problem, and much easier to solve than yours. You obviously have a complicated problem on consolidating your road service areas, but how many households do you have in your largest service area? Is that something you know off the top of your head?
No, it would be over 1,000, I guess I would say. That would be our college service area. They maintain about 20 miles of road, a little over 20 miles of road, and it's one of our most congested service areas. They're in a what I would call more of a subdivision type, houses close together and all that sort of stuff. But I would say it would be probably a little over 1,000 households for that service area.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions? Okay. Well, thank you, Ms. Dolan and Mr. Bradley, for joining us today. So that'll be concluding our meeting for today. The next meeting is going to be next Tuesday, the 30th. We'll be hearing public testimony on both of these bills, 103 and 105. We will be getting back to the committee members here shortly about an amendment deadline. And with that, unless there are any closing comments, nope, we will be adjourned at, looks like, 2:36 p.m. Thank you.